The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke.
Glory to you.
Jesus said to his disciples, "I have come to light a fire on the earth. How I wish that the blaze were ignited. I have a baptism to receive. What anguish I feel till it is over. Do you think that I have come to establish peace on the earth? I assure you, the contrary is true. I have come for division. From now on, a household of five will be divided three against two, and two against three. Father will be split against son, and son against father. Mother against daughter, and daughter against mother. Mother-in-law against daughter-in-law, and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law." The Gospel of the Lord. St. Luke reminds us, mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, the last one. He has a little sense of humor there. But tomorrow is the feast of the Assumption of Mary into heaven, not a holy day. And we remember that Simeon said to Mary at the presentation of Jesus in the temple, "Your son will be a sign of contradiction." And he went on to say that a sword will pierce your soul, referring to Mary standing and watching the Lord at the time of his crucifixion. And the Lord this morning says, "I have come to set the earth on fire, and how I wish it were already blazing." And in the letter to the Hebrews, brothers and sisters, since we are surrounded by so great a crowd of witnesses, let us rid ourselves of every burden and sin that clings to us, and persevere in running the race that lies before us, while keeping our eyes fixed on Jesus, the leader and perfecter of our faith. So we're running a race. You know, we've been watching the Olympics, plenty of races, and most of us can't move that fast, but we're supposed to keep our eyes on Jesus, our leader and perfecter of faith. And today we have those two prophets, the Old Testament prophet Jeremiah, and and then Jesus, the prophet who makes all things new. And both were faithful to their mission, and they told the truth. And Jeremiah ended up in a cistern, sunk in the mud. There was no water in the cistern, only mud. Jeremiah sank into the mud. And Jesus was faithful to his Father and endured the cross for the sake of the joy that lay before him. He endured the cross, despising its shame, and has been taken a seat at the right hand of the throne of God. Being prophetic, being a disciple, always has a cost. There's no room for a wishy-washy Charlie Brown. Our writer, in speaking of the readings in this Sunday's liturgy, he used the title Flame of Truth, and the flame of truth makes us very humble. Humility is down to earth. It's a truth about ourselves, about others, and about God. There is a baptism with which I must be baptized, and how great is my anguish until it is accomplished. Because Jesus, the prophet, told the truth, he's always been a source of division. Do you think that I have come to establish peace on the earth? No, I tell you, but rather division. That division extends to our families, the building block of society, then and now, and the place where each of us belongs, where each of us learns how to love, where each of us learns just who we are. And Jesus always loved children. He told us very clearly that we should become like little children, even if you're very old. And a family is a place where we establish those lifelong bonds with parents, brothers and sisters, and relatives and friends. Children will always be part of a marriage and the family, despite an article in Time magazine a while back featuring a child-free life entitled, None is Enough. Now, my mother had a lot of children, and she used to say when things got bad, she'd drum her fingers, you know, and say, I should have gone to the convent. But she had a sister who went to the convent, and I think she kind of envied her, the carefree life that she had. But, you know, along with Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis, we might well describe ourselves as sinners. And facing the truth about ourselves, I like to think of that magnificent painting of Salvador Dali, The Sacrament of the Last Supper. And there are the disciples huddled around a table, you know, and their heads are bowed down to the table. And it seems that the table is set overlooking the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus is in the center celebrating the Eucharist. The bread is in the front of the table. And he has the cup of precious wine in his hands. And but those apostles are all very humble, bent over. And the ugly truth was that they had abandoned their master at the time of his passion and death. They were utterly humiliated. The disciples were not faithful to their commitment in following Christ. The Old Testament is full of indications of how the Lord was faithful to the covenant with the people, his people. Even today, we find so many examples of people who are totally committed to their promises made to one another. We form bonds in our lifetime. Now, Friday morning on EWTN, the homilist spoke about Moose Kraus. Anybody know Moose Kraus? Well, he was a great football player back in the 30s, and maybe early 40s, at Notre Dame. He was a poor boy that grew up in Chicago. Somebody thought he'd make a good player, so they got him down to Notre Dame. And he was a star, excellent player. And he ended up with athletic director at Notre Dame for many years. But towards the end, his wife got very ill. She was an invalid. And Moose would go and visit her twice a day, feed her with a spoon if she needed that, take great care of her. And, you know, we see these examples in married life, married couple. The older they get, the more they love each other. I don't understand it, but it gets better and better. And there are many examples of married couples caring for one another, caring for children that have problems, you know, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health. And the homilist then contrasted Moose Kraus, so dedicated, with James Bond. Anybody know James Bond? He's not the pastor down at St. Richard, but James Bond, he said, had no bonds. He just used people and kept on going, you know? And he said, we can't live a life like that without bonds. And we develop them through a lifetime. And think of all the people you've been privileged to bond with over the years. Brothers and sisters, mother and dad, and the family. What a great gift that is to have those bonds. And think of all the commitments that you've been faithful to and the demands made by those bonds. We have to help one another and be careful to serve one another. But even today, the truth is hard to swallow. The truth is out of fashion. Telling the truth is a difficult task, especially telling the truth about our conduct. Sometimes we like to lie like an eighth grader. You know, an eighth grader can really lie with a straight face, but you know they're lying. And so often we find that I am the man or the woman who has run or perhaps is still running from the truth. In March of 2003, the Sunday before the invasion of Iraq, I gave a homily in which I said the invasion was morally unjustified. There were no weapons of mass destruction. I was tired of the government lying to all of us, as they did all through the Vietnam War. And I guess I said some more stuff too. But you know, a few people walked out. And but they came back, and next Sunday I saw a man who had walked out. And he told me, you know, Father, I'm against any war. He had two sons, Marines. He said, I'm against any war my sons have to fight in. So, but sometimes we speak out, and maybe rashly, but we try to be prophetic. And why did the Israelite princes throw the prophet Jeremiah into the muddy well? Well, they denied the truth. They were embarrassed. It angered them. They were frustrated. And they didn't want to hear any of it. And but you know, the truth is hard to swallow, and they knew that. But if we're drawn to the truth, if our hearts are restless until they rest in God, why do we fight against the truth and turn from God? We're all sinners, and this becomes clear to me in my own life, especially when I sit down and do some centering prayer, where you sit in a comfortable chair, almost fall asleep, but you, whatever comes up, you talk that over with the Lord. And there are no distractions, because everything comes up. It's fair, you can talk to the Lord about that. And when I do that, I kind of, well, I think of all kinds of good things, maybe, and some not so good. Maybe sins, if you will, and a whole lot of other things. But it's a great reminder to us that we have to sit with ourselves and try to realize who we are. Now, the Lord was kind, loving, a peacemaker, humble, wise, a giver, a giving healer, a truth teller. The world saw this, took notice, they killed him for it. And they were always trying to silence and to kill the prophets. And one of the things that died when Jesus was, what died with Jesus, was the illusion that the world will always reward good deeds. Today is the Sabbath, and one author, Wayne Muller, the author of a book entitled Sabbath, notes that the Sabbath is indeed a retreat from the illusion of our own indispensability. We are important in that we are part of something larger. We are part of the body of Christ, the church, that cloud of witnesses mentioned in the book of Hebrews today. And what a cloud that is. St. Peter and St. Paul, our patron, Thomas More, Joan of Arc, Maximilian Kolbe, Dorothy Day, Oscar Romero, Edith Stein, who is that Carmelite nun who took the name of Sister Benedicta of the Cross, and you might add, your own mother, your own father. And but Henri Nouwen insists that facing the truth about ourselves should make us humble. And speaking of humility, he would often recount the story of Jesus, who after his baptism spent 40 days in the wilderness. And after a long and arduous 40-day fast, Jesus was confronted by Satan, who tempted him, inviting him to turn the stones lying on the ground into bread, thus being able to provide food for the hungry. But Jesus refused, saying that we do not live by bread alone, but by the every word of God. And then Satan suggested Jesus throw himself off the pinnacle of the temple to demonstrate his celestial importance, as surely the angels would bear him up. Again, Jesus refused. And finally, Satan offered Jesus unlimited power, full authority and dominion over all the kingdoms of the earth, if only Jesus would worship him. And Jesus again refused, saying that we are to serve and worship only God. And he defeated the father of lies. According to Henri Nouwen, Jesus' three temptations were these: to be useful, to be important, and to be powerful. And who doesn't want to be useful and important to somebody and powerful? A true freedom comes when we become nobody special, he says. And Jesus said, learn of me, for I am meek and humble of heart. That word humility and humus comes from that Latin word humus, the earth. And we're most human when we do no great things, especially as we age. We may not be very useful. We find that we're not all that important, and definitely not all that powerful. But in the end, we are granted the tremendous blessing of knowing that we do very little at all by ourselves. There was once a rabbi who, overcome by a sense of humility before God's magnificent creation, threw himself before the altar of the temple and cried, "I am nobody, I am nobody." The cantor, observing the rabbi from the altar of the synagogue, was moved by the rabbi's humility and devotion. He too joined the rabbi at the altar, crying, "I am nobody, I am nobody." Then the janitor, sweeping the floor in the hall, heard the cries of these two religious men and, similarly moved by their devotion, also joined them at the altar, crying out, "I am nobody, I am nobody." At that point, the cantor turned to the rabbi and, indicating the janitor, remarked, "Look who thinks he's nobody." And I guess it's easier to feel genuine humility when we are alone. The instant others arrive, we feel the impulse to compare, judge, and puff up. I'm better than that guy, you know. So I guess the Lord reminds us today to go to our rooms and pray in private and secret and ponder the truth of our own sins and failings. This morning we might ask the Lord to use that fire of Christ's truth to touch our lives and find out we're somebody, but we might be better than somebody else, but you know, we're really nobody at the end. And the Lord, He takes care of us, helps us do what needs to be done. So we thank the Lord again for reminding us that He has come to change this world in which we live. God bless you.